Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Joy then came in. She launched 1,000 Voices. We got Tiffany Cross because Joy put Tiffany Cross on TV. I know because I introduced them to pat myself on the back for a second. And I think that they are not having those platforms is something that we will regret.
Joy was the one who really helped me build out and be comfortable on TV because she booked me every weekend. And I was I was baby TV at that point. So all of the experience and context, and then just sitting there, whether I'm on a panel or watching the show, I learned so much about other people's perspectives, right? It wasn't watching TV where I sit there, I'm like, okay, this person's going to say this. All right, that's the counterpoint, you know, the fake debate that you have. I really did learn. Welcome to Trailblaze. This is the show where we talk about the America we can be, the America we're becoming. I'm your host, Nayara Huck.
I am Jamal Simmons. It's good to be here with you, Nayara, again in our weekly therapy session. This is always something I look forward to every week. Listen,
therapy
y'all.
I
just wanted to get on here today. Nayara and I have been trading texts back and forth about this, and I just wanted to get on here today because I wanted to lift up Joy Reid. I wanted to talk about what's happening in the media sphere, but also in the country, obviously. But listen, I think the Joy Reid of it all is that she was just a phenomenal host of a show that put her money where her mouth is in terms of getting people of color on air, putting people of color behind the camera, getting people of color in the production booth. And it started not just with Joy, it started with Melissa Harris-Perry. And when Melissa Harris-Perry had her Sunday morning show, she made it a point to do it. She launched 1,000 Voices. Joy then came in. She launched 1,000 Voices. We got Tiffany Cross because Joy put Tiffany Cross on TV. I know because I introduced them to pat myself on the back for a second. And I think that they are not having those platforms is something that we will regret.
Joy was the one who really helped me build out and be comfortable on TV because she booked me every weekend. And I was I was baby TV at that point. So all of the experience and context, and then just sitting there, whether I'm on a panel or watching the show, I learned so much about other people's perspectives, right? It wasn't watching TV where I sit there, I'm like, okay, this person's going to say this. All right, that's the counterpoint, you know, the fake debate that you have. I really did learn a lot because these people were not only living in their own experience, but they were experts in their field, which is the best part.
Yeah.
And so it not only broadened my own horizons and my own network, but she invested in me personally. And that is so hard to find, really, honestly, in any industry, but let alone one as competitive as media, where the talent on the camera doesn't always look behind the camera, right, to see what else they could be doing.
Totally. I wonder if you had this experience, because remember when that show started, she was in New York. Right. Melissa Harris-Perry was in New York, and then Joy Reid was in New York. And when you're just a little behind the scenes for the folks who haven't been up there, when you're at NBC, MSNBC, and you're going to do those shows on the set, it's the same set they used for Morning Joe. It also was the same green room they used for Morning Joe. And they would often have like things scribbled on the walls from like the Morning Joe show from Friday, but it would be Saturday morning. But I always thought about this. I wonder if you thought about this. I always thought about the fact that there were all these black and brown people who were sitting in this screen room, but just how white the green room had been 24 hours earlier, that there were like almost no black and brown people in that green room during all week. But then on Saturday, it was like disco central.
Well, you know, there was joy to it. Joy as in the person and who she attracted, but also the joy to just being in this show, being together, having these conversations. And you'll see every show, regardless of what the topic is and how dire things are, Joy will laugh And that does something, right? The idea that their laughter and just being able to get through things is part of the way the conversation needs to happen in our country right now, because it can't just be doom and gloom. But let's not, we still hold people's feet to the fire and we point out reality and the truth, and you hold to that. So there's a journalism ethic that she really brought to the table and kept on. And she's one of the few, you know, she's one of the few journalists left in primetime. A lot of folks in primetime now are folks who, you know, had great experiences elsewhere or just interesting personalities or comedians, but she's still at her heart a journalist. And it's something I noted yesterday when I was talking, I did her final show with her. We talked about,
you were on the show, right? Yeah.
We talked about the rise of the right and what resistance and opposition can look like and what it needs to look like. And she intentionally wanted that to be her final message. Like, this is what the job is going forward. And I realized that she doesn't script her panel discussions. She's listening to you in the moment and she's responding, and she's well-read and smart enough to know this is something interesting. This is a nugget. This is a part of the conversation that needs to be brought forward and continued. A lot of other shows are, you know, the questions are in the teleprompter and this person gets this question, ask that, and then move on to the next thing. And she's in the moment, and that's part of what made her show and makes her so exciting, and just her ability to connect with people that way through the screen.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, I think in the old days, people would think of a TV host or a newscaster as kind of like a bimbo, right? Or a himbo, right? Mm-hmm. Just somebody who is like, oh, he's got these really attractive people who are just going to read a script on the teleprompter. And when it's over, you know, they're going to be cute and blonde and they're all going to go away back to their brunch. But when you think about the people who host some of these shows now, particularly thinking about Joy, right? Incredibly well-read. I mean, Melissa was the same way. She was a PhD scholar, you know, and they made it a point to talk about that. Like, Melissa Harris Perry, she had, you know, it was Nerdland. And then when Joy mm-hmm. came in, there were the readers, right? She created a community of people who their job was to be informed and to tune into her show and get mm-hmm. more informed from people who actually knew things. I just, you know, I think you're right. You just hit on something. It was all really smart TV.
There's a term for it, right? That idea of the parasocial relationship you have with a person in the media or in celebrity culture. And it's, you've connected with that person, and that connection is why you keep tuning in the same time mm-hmm. or why you say, oh, this news happened. What does this person have to say? And mm-hmm. that's what made the Walter Cronkites of the world work, right? That trust that you develop through that relationship, even though you've never met the person, but you get a sense of it. I know who they are. I believe I know who they are. And she built that. And there's not that, a Barbie doll can't do that. That's just a mm-hmm. news reader, right? That's not somebody mm-hmm. that you look at and say, what, I want to know what they think today. And the best part is that will continue with her. I mean, she ain't disappearing. She's just not going to be on MSNBC, but she's going to go somewhere. And so the voices and interest will still be there. It does remind me, Jamal, though, this idea that to really feel community connection, to feel that you're getting unvarnished truth, more and more, that's independent media. It's not the big corporate, even though you and I do corporate TV too, that's not where this is going. Cable TV in general is an existential crisis. Their viewers are literally dying. It's an aged audience. Everybody under the age of 50, most people have cut the cord. They're not watching cable, or if they're seeing something from cable news, they're seeing it on a device through social media. So how right. we connect and communicate is much different than what our parents did. And I think that's some of what we're navigating in this Trump 2 is what is necessary? What does that need to look like for people to build these communities of opposition and resistance?
Yeah, and building for the future, right? I mean, I was just talking to someone a few minutes ago about, you know, maybe we're in this moment where there's resistance that has to happen. We've got to slow them down as much as we can. We've got to protect the core assets, the crown jewels, as they say. You know, you got to keep the worst things from happening. But we also have to build for the future. We have to acknowledge that some of this stuff is going to happen. They are changing the government, changing the society. And the truth is, even if they stop today, they've already changed society, right? Mm-hmm. There are things that are different. There are things that are tolerated that we no longer tolerate. So the question is, how are we going to adapt to build new institutions, new ideas, new programs, more change in the direction we want so that the country, the society, not just the political entity, but the community that we live in, will have the values that you and I think are important, not just for how we live today, but how our children are going to live in the future.
I think some of it has to be investing in other countries, particularly authoritarian countries, they call civil society. Over here, we'll call nonprofits and community organizing. Right. But it is, I don't think that our main channels of communication and connection can be built around or designed around making profit. Yeah, everybody needs to get us paid a salary. But if the organization is around just profit, then they'll go where the money is. And that's not where the truth is always. And that's not where the stories are.
Well, particularly with news, I think that's right, right? With information sharing, I think that there is a real need for the value of the information to have some level of the value of it being truthful, being important. That's the currency of it, is that we can trust it. I also know enough about technology to know that a lot of what we are experiencing, there's always a counter reaction or reaction to the thing that exists, right? So AI is here and deep fakes are here. Somebody will detect a deep fake detector, right? Somebody will create a deep fake detector that I think we will be able to use, or there will be there'll be something else that emerges that counters the thing that exists. And this is the whole like subject matter. I'm a big science fiction nerd. This is the whole subject matter of things like the Matrix, right? Like there's always a kernel of the opposition that is created by the overlord of whatever society is that you're living in.
And
so we got to just keep our eye out for that.
I think that's a big part of what X under Elon Musk and what some of the podcasting had become was this alternative media where we will tell you the truth, and right, this idea of corporatist media or legacy media. And I'm not talking about the media outlets as necessarily like this is how they have to be, as much as that the narrative that these newer independent organizations came up with, that narrative resonated with people, even though journalism and legacy media were continuing to do the work they need to do. And then you have billionaire owners buying out these platforms, right? And Elon Musk has clearly shaped X in his own image. Jeffrey Bezos at Amazon and Washington Post. There's all of these similar entities, and part of the Joy Reid and many other hosts being let go from MSNBC is because there is a Comcast interest in selling multiple of their cable networks. So all of that ends up taking over. And I think it is an opportunity for communities to actually start building and reinvesting in these more local, more tangible, more community-driven information networks.
Here's what I wonder. And that's all. I think that's all super smart. I wonder.
Thank you.
Not that you need me to tell you that. You know that already. That's the reason why we talk to each other all the time. But I wonder, are we just in the age of oligarchs? And do we just need the left to find its own oligarchs to battle the oligarchs on the right? And like, is there a way to have asymmetric warfare where you're battling something so powerful from a different level and you're able to take it down? Or do you actually need to bring in your own megabot Robotron, right, to fight their megabot Robotron? You have little kids, so I'm sure your son, yeah, or somebody
I
has,
do.
Your daughter has some, yeah, so many. Toy well, robot, you know, like this.
What kind of Paw Patrol are we talking about?
right.
I think that's been tried by the Democratic Party, who are, you know, the billionaires, the George Soroses of the world, right? You have, you know, Bill Gates being like, of course I should be paying taxes. What are you talking about? This is no way to run a country if wealthy people don't pay taxes anymore. The challenge is, at the end of the day, their incentives still end up aligning in many ways to the incentives of all oligarchs. So you're still stuck with an oligarchy. It's just like oligarchy minus some of the fascist stuff, oligarchy minus some of the racist stuff. Like, okay. And I would take that over if those were only my two options, but I don't think it's a binary choice, because what has always worked in American history is organizing and people power. And that's where the narratives come in, right? The narrative that set poor white people against black people was very, very effective. And are you able to overcome that? Can we keep drilling down and hammering home that oligarchs do not have our interests in mind, because our is pretty much everybody who's not a billionaire. That's it. Like, there is unity in that. If you are not a billionaire, this government may not be for you right now.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
So, people power plus actual
money.
Power,
yeah, but I mean, right? there's still money that's needed.
We've always seen in every effort. I mean, you know, you look at the Civil War, we talk about slavery, but it really was the kind of mercantile North versus the agrarian South. And they didn't really need, the economy was shifting. And people, you know, the slave culture of the South was getting in the way of the North's ability to sell its product that it was manufacturing. And so there was an economic interest on behalf of Northerners to stop the slave culture. And they certainly didn't need it anymore, even though they were built off of it. And then you think about like the civil rights movement. There's this great thing a professor of mine once did, because I went to school in Atlanta. And he said, if you took a look at a picture of Atlanta and a picture of Birmingham, Alabama in 1950, the skylines were almost exactly the same. And then you look at a picture of Atlanta in like 1990 or something, and Birmingham, and it's like New York City versus like the plains of Nebraska, right? Like, it's that kind of a different skyline. He said the difference between those two places was that Atlanta accommodated civil rights and figured out how to work with the new desegregated South, and Birmingham resisted it utterly, right? Yep. And so there is a point where those of us who are strategizing about how to do this, we do have to figure out where in the economic classes, where in the economic class of power and privilege do we have allies that we can leverage to build the things that we want to create?
Listen,
at least as
Costco,
long as we're a capitalist society.
Costco, right? They are like, you know, we're going to keep our programs, DEI programs. Thank you very much. And look, they saw an increase in foot traffic and money. How about that? Target saw a decrease. Yep. I mean, this is not even necessarily a massively organized, on this day, we're going to have a sick out. It's just naturally people are like, I don't like that. I don't like that anymore. Ooh, I love that. And so the fact that we are able to connect in so many different ways digitally, right? Those are the information networks that people need to capitalize on as just humans and consumers and have these conversations. The part of the Democratic Party challenge was, it felt disconnected from these natural ways in which we already are communicating, right? The reality has been there. Leadership or people put forward just didn't know how to communicate or connect in that way, right? It wasn't organic and natural.
Can I ask you a question? I want to tap into your foreign policy brain, because for those of you guys who have not been paying attention to Naira's career over the last decade or so that I have, you know, she's not just a brilliant communicator. She also has come out of foreign policy stuff. She worked at the State Department. She worked at the White House. She knows a lot about national security issues. So we saw another firing this week of General C.Q. Brown, who is the second African-American chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. How do you pick up on that? And what does that say to you about what's happening over at the Defense Department?
I think the context that he's the second is important, because the first one was Colin Powell, and he was very, very popular. Yeah, Republican. Right. Very, very powerful. Popular, rather. And he had, you know, despite his record of success in the Gulf Wars, I mean, he did, when he became Secretary of State under George Bush, there was the whole, and he regretted his using his voice to support going into Iraq. He felt that he had been lied to and was part of the lie that was given to the American public. So you've already had somebody there who's done the hard work and, you know, ripped off the Band-Aid of being the first. C.Q. Brown, really non-controversial. In fact, when he was nominated, Trump congratulated him because he was nominated in the tail end of Trump's administration. And in the wake of Black Lives Matter, he recorded a video talking about his own experience as a Black man who is a fighter pilot. Here's a 4-star general. So he was, he was the head of the Air Force as a fighter pilot and an engineer. Yeah. He's both. He's dual-hatted before being elevated to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. His removal is especially shocking because there was nothing truly controversial in his tenure. There was no war that he got us into, right? There's no war that he had to wind down in that sense, other than what we've always been doing in countering ISIS, and which, again, ISIS has been defeated in Syria. Right. Like all of those, all of the war trend lines, winding down the war in Afghanistan, you know, seeing ISIS on its back foot, all of, like all the trend lines are positive for what you would think about you want a military general to be worried about. Those are all positive. And to remove him, saying that he focused too much on diversity, is very telling. It's also who he's trying to replace him with, which is a 3-star general. And I'll just say, it is, there are other 4-stars out there, but the idea that a 3-star general, so who is less experienced, less tenured,
is now going to be brought out,
right? So who also has not been working and active in this for several years, is going to be brought out and put ahead of other 4-star generals, the ones who are remaining, right? Let's not forget, there's the Marines, there's the, it's the Marines, it's the Army,
the Space Force,
Navy, like technically under Space Force, technically under Air Force.
right.
So it's not even just about insulting C.Q. Brown at the end of his legacy. It's also, what are you saying to the rest of the command structure that somebody who is retired and junior to you can now be brought in ahead of you? That I think is especially damaging to the force, because what people go through for promotions and how dedicated and committed they are and how narrow it gets the further up you get, that's part of the reward system for putting in your time. And so now you're telling everybody else in the force that, oh, actually doing things by the rules doesn't really matter. Because as long as the political appointee likes you, the political, forget the service people, if the political appointee likes you, they'll just move you around the way they want to. And the politicization of the military is hugely problematic, because that is one thing that has kept us apart from many of these other developing countries and autocratic states, is that civilians had oversight over the military, but the military also had its own ethic and code of conduct that did not matter about what was going on in politics. That's how you maintain a standing army.
Yeah.
Right? It's far more than, oh, okay, so you remove the quote unquote woke Black guy who actually was pretty amazing at what he did and well-respected, just happened to also be Black. You remove him and you then change, you're starting to change the way the military recruits, the way the military does advancement, and it sends a really bad message, not only to our core, the American public, but also to the rest of the world, that now this is looking more like monarch who wants military to be at his beck and call, independent of any type of military ethics or what's good for the military of the country.
Yeah. So first of all, let's just go ahead and stipulate that when they say DEI, they actually don't mean what you work on. They don't mean encouraging. They mean Black. Okay. Yep. I mean, this is a euphemism for Black. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, he's like, do you think that means that they say Jalen Hurts was like a DEI quarterback? Absolutely. Yes. Because quarterbacks should be white in terms of the way they look at how the world should work. And so DEI means Black. I also think that this is classic dictator behavior, because take over the intelligence services, right? Mm-hmm. Take over the military, start moving people around. Basically, you know, you look, Trump did a press conference a while back. Take over the payment system. But this thing, he was walking down the White House into the East Room to give a press conference, and they had military, members of the military on either side of him, looked like a Praetorian guard, like from ancient Rome, right? And so he's walking through his guard, his like elite forces in order to go there, because that's what happens, right? The leaders can't trust the entire military, so they create like a special service around themselves that would just protect them in case all things go to hell. And so, right, the military, the payment system, who they pay who they want, when they want. They're getting into everybody's personnel records. They're looking at everybody's social security. All the things that they're doing. So it just, you know, I remember Venezuela 25 years ago. Hugo Chavez tried to mount a coup, an insurrection. He lost. Part of the deal when they got him out was they returned the president to the palace and they agreed to hold elections within a certain period of time. I think it was like 2 years or something like that. And then Hugo Chavez won the next election. And then that was Venezuela for like the next 2 decades. Mm-hmm. That was it.
People forget that elections have brought forward autocrats. Putin was elected. Mm-hmm. The idea of, oh, you know, there's a mandate and that mandate means do whatever you want is not true. But this is how it starts. This is how it works. There's a legitimacy at the beginning, and then it's okay, I'm going to get away with what I can. You and what army is going to stop me? And that's what brings it back to the control of the military, right? You and what army? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so Mark Wayne Mullen, the senator from Indiana. So this is just my own little side pet peeve. He was on a Sunday show last week and they were asking him this question about the Trump's trying to negotiate this deal with Putin about Ukraine. And they asked him, is Putin a dictator? And they said, well, that's up to the Russian people to decide who they want. But no, it's actually not up to the Russian people. Like, that's the whole point of being a dictator, is the people actually don't get to choose anymore.
Well, but you let them think they're choosing.
Right.
Putin, they technically have elections in Russia, technically. There's no opposition party. That's right, actually allowed to run. Right, not for real. Right. But they technically have elections.
Right. That's right.
You're and
right.
So they continually go over and put a stamp of legitimacy on this. And you will see that. That's part of this idea that, oh, Republic, you know, Trump has this mandate, will of the people, like that. Not to do whatever else he wants, to work within the law, to be within the law. That's, yes, that's a president's mandate. But that language will be used, the elections language will be used to justify a whole bunch of stuff that's anti-democratic.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
And so here's what, so here's the thing that just appears to me. I mean, it's not just to me, but it's not just that they don't like the kind of government that we have. It's not just that they don't like the form of the democracy. I think the real revolt here is that the MAGA hardcore, and I'm not going to just go Republicans because I know lots of, I know lots of good Republicans who don't agree with this, but the MAGA hardcore doesn't like the society that we built.
Correct.
That's why when you go into the military, it's not that they just don't like CQ Brown. They don't like a military where they have things like including women in the combat forces. I mean, the secretary said that he didn't think that should occur. Mm-hmm. He doesn't think that there ought to be African-American, we should be looking for African-American talent or people of color.
Well, not in the officer corps. It's perfectly okay to recruit African-Americans in the grunts, right?
Right. You need somebody to go out there and shovel the shit and fight, right?
Yeah. But not in the officer corps, because who should be in charge?
You know what else? You know what else? You probably saw this when you were in the 2000s, when you were at the State Department and all the national security apparatus, is now that we fight wars so much with special forces, you know, you don't really have people of color in the special forces. I mean, the special forces is really like almost all white, almost all white, almost all male. And so what you end up having now in the military are you have all these people of color, these low wage Latinos, African Americans, others who are just literally like working, like they're built, you know, they're building things. They're in the Corps of Engineers, or they're, you know, driving trucks, or they're doing all these other
things.
They're
doing the maintenance of a truck
convoy, right, get blown up. Like those, that's where, like, and everything is front lines. That's where the people of color are getting killed. And I just think, you know, they're built. And so then in order to move up an advancement, this is like the tricky part, right? Because in order to move up an advancement to command, you really have to have combat experience. And if you are more combat experience is happening with special forces units, which are particularly not diverse, you end up with a smaller cadre of people who can even qualify to be included in the leadership of these military organizations.
So, the military does have two separate structures. There's the officer corps and then the enlisted. So you can have a sergeant who has 30 years of experience, but a second lieutenant who's just coming out of office OCS, you know, at the age of what, 24, then, if they're smart, they'll listen to their sergeant, but ultimately they're the ones who call the shots. And that's that's how this works, right? That is just fundamental. There's officers and there's enlisted. And there's varying degrees of experience, but military is all about you got your orders and the unit cohesion. I mentioned this in the context of diversity because the military has been at the forefront of challenging American institutions because they've had to. Like, well, we need people. We're recruiting Black people. Oh, guess what? World War II, we see that overseas. And when they're fighting together, Black people and white people do just fine together. Huh.
Right.
Maybe integration can work. Guess what? Nobody really cares when they're in the heat of battle if somebody gay or not. That's it.
No.
The people who actually are in these jobs doing the work do not care. They are fine with whatever version of diversity you want to mention. Like, is this person going to be able to pick up, carry their weight? Yes, great. Done.
Right.
Have they got my back?
This woman helicopter pilot.
Done.
Right. Yeah.
Has she got my back?
Baldwin.
Done. Right. That's all I need to know.
When Tammy Baldwin flies her helicopter in to rescue your ass. Right. Like,
do you
care? Caring about the fact that she's, you know, got long hair. Nobody cares.
And that is the thing that I have found wonderful about
Tammy Baldwin, the other senator from Wisconsin. I'm sorry. I said Tammy Baldwin. Tammy Duckworth. Thank you very much for correcting me.
Yep. That's what I have found very interesting about and wonderful about the military is that ability to strip away all of these other crazy social things that we tend to care about and get to the truth of it, which is, you got my back. Can we do this? And the answer resoundingly at every social integration challenge has been yes, yes, yes. Why are they saying no now? Why are they saying no at this point when you have a recruitment challenge? When you have all of this disconnection, kicking away people who want to serve is not good for the unit cohesion. It's not good for the military. So their agenda is not about what's good for the military. It's good about national security. What's good for the majority of the American public. It is very clearly an agenda that is, we don't like how society looks and is shaped right now. There are certain people who should have power and certain people who should not. How can we reshape using the tools of democracy America so it looks more like what MAGA wants rather than what democracy makes possible? And they're working it. They're doing it. And so far, they're meeting with success.
Right. Democracy is a tool to get you to the kind of society that you want. And the truth is,
it's not the
end. And that's been one of the biggest challenges I've had fighting or arguing with some of the do-gooder democracy types is they're fighting for democracy for democracy's sake, which
on
is fine. I believe democracy is an important
tool.
But
if it ain't doing anything for me,
there's a problem.
But I also think
we've got to change the material conditions of the people who live in this democracy or else we're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to go to somebody. I've seen this, you know, in Arab Spring. They're like, well, okay, did democracy put food on my table? Did democracy keep my job? Don't talk to me about freedom of press until that stuff's taken care of. And I get why they say that. However, in the long run, that type of back and forth discussion is how you get all of those things for everybody, as opposed to food on your table and jobs for only a select few.
Right. Well, this is, I don't know if this was informative to other people. It was informative to me because I always learn when I talk to you.
Same. I feel the same. Like I said, if nothing else, it's therapy on these this week's topics.
Yes, exactly. So this is great. It's a great show. Thank you for being here and letting me be here with you. I like it. It's fun.
I do. And I appreciate it that we get to trailblaze together. And as you can tell, folks, we're still figuring it out. So figure it out with us. Make sure that you sign in and subscribe so you can hear us on all platforms.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.